Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. My guests are here on Love, Lust, and Laughter for part two. And part one was last month on the 23rd. Sexual energy experts, Drs. Rob and Janelle Alex, are mentoring couples around the world, and they are best-selling authors, speakers, and hosts of the top-rated Mission Date Night podcast, and that can be found at missiondatenight.com. Welcome once again to this program, Rob and Janelle.
Thank you. We're excited to be back.
Yes, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to talk. We had a great discussion when you were last on sexy secrets behind business. And if people want to listen to that, if they miss that, they can go to the archives from February 23rd. So today we're going to focus on merging sexuality and spirituality. And your work is quite diverse, but have you always focused on the relationships and spirituality?
No. Well, we've been focused on relationships since 2009.
Yeah.
Our work. But when Rob, not to speak for you, sorry, when he first started going that direction, his focus was definitely didn't have the spiritual component, if you will. However, for me, I actually was doing my graduate work back then, so I was focusing on and studying transpersonal psychology. And because of a class that I came across there, it was an article in one of the classes that had nothing to do with sexuality, but it was on transcendent sex. And I passed the article off to Rob, and I always call him Mr. Frisky anyway, so I said, you're going to want to read this.
Mr. Frisky, that's
and,
good.
You know, and that led to his interest in it, and ended up he had a transcendent experience during one of our lovemaking sessions. And long story short, because it's a huge long story, he really ended up having a spiritual awakening within a very short period of time. So in 2010, and that is really, and that and what it continues to happen, it has ever since then, the last 6.5 years or whatever now, 5.5, I probably can't add, but anyway. But that's really led him to just more and more and more explore and bring in the spiritual piece. And, of course, we do that work together.
Yeah. So. And like Janelle said, when I first started that, my main goal was just to help relationships. I wanted everybody to have a great relationship. And I didn't know the spiritual aspects of it. I was probably on that path at that time, but I didn't realize it. I didn't have the knowledge or the questioning to put into it to go, hey, wait a second, I can really transform people's lives and their relationships through these amazing experiences and amazing things that I'm learning through spirituality and metaphysics.
Yeah, the metaphysical perspectives, because, you know, we were both born and raised in central Indiana. So, you know, in the Midwest, we were only a couple hours from the Bible Belt. And rigid Christianity didn't fit with either one of us. So.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to expand your horizons, and with great benefit, because your personal sex life has deepened and become transcendent, and then you're able to mentor and help other people get to these places. So tell us a little bit more about how you first came to realize that your personal sex life could be sacred or spiritual, could be a sacred or spiritual experience. How did you first come to that?
Well,
with a little more detail,
Janelle
than
said,
I know you just
me,
talked about a little bit, but
yeah, Janelle gave me that article to read, and I was I'm curious about everything sexual. I was like, okay, I want to read as much as I can. I want to learn things, but I hadn't at that point dove into the spiritual side, the metaphysical side of sexuality yet. And I read that article, and I was like, wow, am I just not paying enough attention when we're making love? I mean, are these things going on, and I'm just so absorbed in the pleasure that I'm receiving that I just I'm oblivious to other amazing things that are going on. And so I set my intentions on that. And lo and behold, you know, I was given what I wanted. And I found that in the pleasure that we experienced together. And I had a vision. I had a vision of that. I was laying in the forest looking up at these gigantic trees. And I, for a while, I didn't know what that meant. It was like, oh, that's nice, but I don't know what it means. It's not like the, you know, seeing lightning bolts or fireworks or anything like that. It was just kind of, you know, just kind of melancholy for that matter. And I was like, so I said, okay, that was nice. I got something. I paid attention. I did receive, you know, some kind of message, but I had no idea what it meant. Until a few, what was it about it?
It was only about a month later.
Month later.
And I was actually, I had went to California for a seminar, and then Rob came out to meet up with me after that. And he wanted to take me, you know, we were in California. He wanted to take me on a whale watching tour. It's one of the few things that I so want to do that I hadn't yet and still haven't done.
Oh.
And I knew, you know, and this gets into that whole piece of, you know, I'm very in tune with my, whatever you want to call it, intuition, my guides, you know, all that woo-woo stuff to a lot of people. but I knew, I just knew that inner knowing that I said, oh, no, we're not supposed to do that. We're supposed, I had to take him to the Redwood Forest, and I couldn't put my finger on it why. Anyway, we went there, and within the first few minutes, he looked up, and he went, oh, my God, that's what I saw, you know, a few weeks ago at the point of orgasm. And he just, Rob started just crying. I mean, he was just bawling, you know, it was so emotional. But that kind of stuff happens all the time for him, for both of us. For him, it's usually at the point of orgasm. For me, I can get visions and different information and connections with spirit guides, and I can do that standing here, but I do have that tendency to be able to do that after we've made love, too, and sometimes it's a little different. So there's not one way, and I think that's a really key point, because people are like, well, what does it mean to have a transcendent experience? It just really, truly goes beyond your physical humanness at all. It's that stuff that you truly almost can't put into words. It's like, how did that even happen? Where did that come from? And it certainly doesn't have to be a vision. It's just one of the things that people experience, and it happens to be what Rob experiences. Sorry.
Yeah, and the funny part is that after we're intimate and we're lying in bed and just relaxing and holding each other and experiencing that valley orgasm, so often we'll start a conversation, you know, it's like, well, what did you see?
Yeah.
What did you experience? And these conversations are fascinating. It's just like, wow, we're opening up a whole different world when we do that.
And I want to say, Diana, too, because I know we just jabbered on here, not giving you another room to say anything. But for a lot of people actually do experience, or have rather, transcendent experiences during their lovemaking. But the vast majority of people are afraid to say it to their partner because they'll think their partner will think they are crazy. So for us to stand here and say, hey, yeah, we can talk about it, you know, that's just a spot that our relationship is in, and there's such a level of trust within our relationship that we can tell each other those things, and not everyone is in that type of space. So
you're emphasizing, and I certainly agree with you, communication.
Yes.
And take that risk to share if you're having spiritual higher level experiences, to share that with your partner. Now, you mentioned spirit guides, and you know, this is an area that some people don't believe in.
Right.
I do, but tell us about how a person's sex life can help them connect to their spirituality and even to the spirit guides. Could you elaborate on that? Spirit
guides?
Well, I
think for me, this has been an interesting piece because I've always been able to do it. You know, I didn't really know any different. I don't know if you want to call it lucky, blessed, whatever. You know, I've just always been able to connect and so forth. Mine's changed and switched and become more powerful, I guess you could say, because of what we've manifested and what we've created. However, when you think of entering into an amazing sexual experience with your partner or by yourself, it really becomes an alternative state of consciousness. So I know that's all psychobabble, but when you get into that different zone, you know, you're in that whole different blissful state and it feels so good. You really do open yourself. It becomes a meditative state in a sense. Sometimes we do talk about sexual meditation even, but it gets into that. So we're more open to things coming in, to different information. It can enhance our dreams because, again, if we go to sleep right after lovemaking or self-pleasuring, then you have that, again, that you have the physical aspects that are changed, right? And we could talk about the chemicals that are released in the body. But it's just that blissful state. I mean, the body is more relaxed and the mind, which allows and kind of opens that doorway for these other possibilities. And for some people, it might just, you know, they might consider it even a sexual prayer if the idea of spirit guides seems weird to them.
Well, and I also think there's a strong connection with the energy that you create when you're making love to your partner or self-pleasuring for that matter. There's an energy that you create, and this is my opinion. I know some people say, well, energy can't be created or destroyed. I beg to differ. But I think that we create an energy, and that energy can attract those spirit guides and kind of go out and say to them, hey, I would like some information, or hey, you know, I'm paying attention now. Please come and tell me something. So I think that energy can also reach out through time, space, whatever you want to look at, through the portals, and bring those spirit guides closer to us if we're ready to experience that.
Have you found that you have some regular spirit guides that, that visit you?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
What have they given you?
You know, I don't know, before this initially happened for Rob and before everything changed for us in that area, arena, whatever you call it. But then within, as I'm trying to think, in my head it's been so longer now, but it was just a few months after Rob's initial experience. So that happened in like July, August for him, his first experience like that. And then that following February, I was in California again. I was, like I said, I was doing graduate work. So I was at a seminar and we were getting ready to do a class on dreams, and Jeremy Taylor was leading that. I was taking his class, which he's, anybody that knows, Jeremy Taylor is phenomenal with dream work. He's amazing.
I'm sorry, Janelle, slow down just a little bit because I had a little trouble hearing you. What is his name?
Jeremy Taylor.
Okay. Taylor
and
with a T?
Pardon?
Taylor with a T?
Taylor with a T, as in
Tom. Got
it. Tom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeremy,
so go on.
Is amazing. He's wonderful with dream work. We were all focusing on our dreams that night before we were going to have his presentation so that we were prepared and had something to share. And I had a wolf come to me. And mind you, I've never really, you know, dolphins might have been something I was drawn to, but wolves, they're really beautiful, but I didn't think that much about them. However, I knew that this wolf was powerful, and he stood there and stared at me in my dream state. And I went into meditation that morning, and I said, okay, I want to know your name. I know you're here as a guide. And what's it about? I did get a name, which was Kale, and we got a crazy validation synchronistically throughout the day, that day. I say we. Rob didn't know anything about it yet. He was in Indiana. my classmates, I was telling them about it. So I got this, and so anyways, long story short, I finally told Rob about it when I got back home. And then he started to, I call them dreams, but they're not. He calls them visits.
Yeah,
and he started to have these visits at night from this gigantic, massive, beautiful wolf. And that is, Kale has been with us now, since then. So it was about six years. And he has a mate. And I met her during I did a journey, somewhat like a shamanic journey. And so she's a part of that, and she's with us all the time. And it's just two. We have a lot. We share those, which is an interesting piece that most people don't talk about. It is possible to have shared guides with your partner, with friends, with your community even. And so that's something we finally figured out for us as well.
Yeah, it took us a little while to figure it out, but once we did, and then the messages started coming through. And like Janelle said, she calls it the dream state, and I totally – disagree with my lovely wife on that, but because I witness them the way I do, and I'm awake in these. These are not like dreams that I have. I have very crazy and weird dreams at times, but this is very to the point, and I get a lot of information from them that is not usually coded, if you will. It's usually very straightforward with what I'm supposed to be doing or what we're supposed to be doing. So to me, I call it a visit more than a dream, right, or anything else. So.
Well, this is fascinating, and I suspect that lots of people would love to have this experience, but they just do not know how to get there.
Well, I will say, I would love to have the visits that Rob has. I don't get those that way because it's a matter of connecting in a different way. You know, we have had clients, and we actually have friends that, because of the things that we've taught them, they actually have been blessed enough to have visits from their guides as well on a regular basis, like Rob gets. But it's not, you know, that's not always how we see it, and mine's different. I know I can talk to them, but it's different. So you have to watch for synchronicities. There's a lot of things that can show up. You know, anybody that pays any attention to numerology is often drawn to threes. Threes are a big thing that has come to be for Rob and I as well. And we will see those threes, like, just, I can't even tell you how many times we see 33 or 333 every single day of both of our lives.
Right.
We don't even keep track of it because it happens so much. It's crazy.
What's the significance of a three from a spiritual numerology point of view?
There are different schools of thought on it. One of the schools of thought on that is that it means the ascended masters are around you. Now, okay, what are ascended masters? Ascended masters, there's a variety. Jesus could be considered an ascended master, Buddha. There's Khan, which actually is a guide for me. And then I went, oh, he was considered an ascended master. I didn't know. So there's many, many different ones. Like, you know, even some people would say Mother Teresa was as well. So it's just a very enlightened being in that sense, very mm-hmm. powerful. They know a lot. They're mm-hmm. very above where we apparently are.
Janelle, I missed the last part. Who is?
Jesus, I would say Buddha, even Mother Teresa, it would be considered.
No, because you said something after that, and I missed it. Well,
after that?
Mm-hmm.
Who else did I say? Oh, Khan, because not everybody knows that. Khan was a prince, and I can't remember, like, it's spelled K-H-A-N.
Uh-huh.
And the only reason I bring it up is because during some of my journeys and meditations, I had a strong guide that is there for me, and I've got his name as Khan, and I always am given a spelling, so I started looking it up. And when I looked it up, I went, oh, my gosh, he was considered an ascended master. And I'm like, holy cow, really? Me? Little old me? Can I seriously be talking to a being that was that powerful? I don't know, but that's what I get. So,
well.
And one thing for the others out there that, you know, would want to have some experiences like this, like Janelle said, you know, pay attention to the numerologies and the synchronicities, but you just have to open your mind and find those things that just might seem a little out of place. Something that, you know, just draws your attention for some reason or another. It might be an animal sitting outside your window. It could be a smell. All of a sudden you get a strong smell of something. I mean, you know, we've had it before we're making love, and then all of a sudden we're like, hey, do you smell something? And it's funny that we both pick up on it. And it's just being open and aware to those things that are going on around you so that then you can start to kind of hone in and see what they mean or what you feel they mean to you as you're going on. We often get a root beer smell. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not during our lovemaking usually, but we'll get a root beer smell when we're doing something. And it tells us, my grandfather was a huge root beer drinker. He had to have root beer all the time. And he has since, he passed away a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's our way of knowing, hey, he's around us. He's guiding us. Maybe we're trying to make a decision and he's trying to help us those type of things.
Well, even the other day, because this one's a funny story. Because, see, just because Rob and I have a great and amazing relationship doesn't mean that we don't get aggravated with each other.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was aggravated with him the other day. He was driving, and I was like, seriously, you almost just bumped that car in front of us or whatever. And so I was giving him a hard time. Not the nagging wife, but I was still on him a little bit, like, arr. And all of a sudden I went, Rob, I smell root beer. And he said, I don't smell it. And we're in the car, right? And I said, oh, my gosh, it's your grandfather telling me to get off your back.
Sure. Messages from beyond.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm much more a believer in this ever since my late husband, Charlie, died. And he was only 57, and he died very suddenly. And we were living in Hawaii, and I saw a psychic named Arthur for quite a few months, about once a month. A friend who's sort of very spiritual said, well, wait a couple of months till Charlie's spirit gets settled. And this psychic channeler that I saw, well, I became a believer, and Charlie, even though he died in 2000, so it's been almost 16 years. But I became very much more of a believer that we do have life beyond this one that we know, and I had some spirit guides too. I can't say that I've channeled them. Specifically in sexuality, but you've given me some things to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly have energy, ecstatic sex with, took me 10 years to find Brian, my fiance, but found him 5.5 years ago, and we are having amazing sex. So I do practice what I preach, and I think it would be interesting. I mean, there's so much that we don't know. So we want to stay open, as you two obviously are, stay open to possibilities. And I think it's a very good thing. Now let's shift the discussion a little bit. And one of the things that you suggest in your media kit is that one of the things that you teach, you, Rob, and Janelle, is that it's vital for individuals to know themselves, to really know who they are before they can truly experience sacred intimacy in their romantic relationship. Mm-hmm. I think that this touches very much on some of David Snarch's work, where knowing yourself, standing on your own two feet rather than trying to merge with your partner or even lose yourself in love. And when you can do this, I know it can personally. I have witnessed it in a few of my clients after they've done some really good work, but it can lead to the best sex you've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So that differentiation, which involves learning to balance your individuality, your separateness, with your emotional connection to someone else, your togetherness. So expand on that a little bit, if you will.
I think one of the first things that comes to my mind is, you know, when you marry your partner, and just to make it, I think, sound easier, when I married Rob, I married Rob. I didn't marry Janelle's husband. So I love him and these amazing things about him, his personality. I love that he enjoys cycling. He loves to go do that. He loves to work out, whatever it is. You know, there's so many different things. And vice versa, there's things that he loved about me and my personality. So if I lose myself in the relationship and lose myself in him, then I've just shifted. I've changed. I mean, we all change every day. I mean, that's part of it. We do grow and change. But now it's just this, like, wait a minute, where did the person I love go? It's like you're not really who you were at all. I mean, it's just this loss. And I think that and I just actually, a friend of mine just had this posted yesterday or the day before on Facebook, and it was someone's article and or post that she'd shared and was talking about how you have to fall, you know, you have to lose yourself in the relationship, and the whole idea is to be constantly focused on merging into one. And I was just adamant. I was like, no, 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 no. And usually I don't kind of come back at people, but I was like, no, like, no, we have to be two, the two individuals. And then there's that third entity within our relationship that is the relationship.
Yeah. And I don't want, you know, we're not trying to confuse people, because, you know, your relationship is vital. It's not just like you just do whatever you want and you don't care about your partners. That's not the thing, but you take stock in yourself. Mm-hmm. You make sure that you're happy too. It's not just about pleasing your partner, which we want to do too, but we want to please ourselves also. So it's more than just saying, oh, I'm just worried about myself. So I don't want people to think the wrong thing out there. It's about taking care of yourself and living your life to the fullest and bringing and sharing that with your partner.
And I'm very adamant that you can only love someone else as much as you love yourself.
That's
now,
really,
I completely
really true.
Understand that a lot of people go, especially in my opinion, especially moms, because women sometimes we have a hard time loving ourselves, and we go, but I adore my kids. Oh my gosh. And my kids are my world. But then I finally figured out, I'm like, no, really, I can't love them any more than I love myself. Not really. So, and that's
well,
a really
yes.
deep message.
Yes. You know, I think that to be a really good parent or a really good lover, you have to be evolved and know yourself. It's one reason, frankly, that I postponed having children. When I did it way back when, I was 33 when my daughter was born and 37 when my son was born, and I just felt that I would have more to contribute to them because I was more evolved and mature, and also I had worked out my wanderlust because I traveled the world in my 20s, and so it worked because my children got secure attachment, and they're both really high-functioning adults, and I'm very proud of them, but it kind of also what we're talking about. You know, you in relationships, I believe you don't work on your marriage. Your marriage works on you. It's a people-growing system. And even the brain neurons, and I think you talk about that, too, the neurons in your brain that reflect, mirror neurons is the word I want, mirror neurons that reflect your relationship with another, but you have to know how to be yourself and to hold on to yourself simultaneously in a relationship.
Absolutely. And you know what I often say there is that really I believe the marriage or relationship is a spiritual path. Mm-hmm. And really if spiritual path doesn't make sense in that phrasing, it's an opportunity for exceptional personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I often relate it to a race. It's not this sprint. And, you know, marriage is not a sprint where there's a finish line and everything's great. You know, it's like if we hurry up and just get to that point, it'll just be perfect. And that's not the case because it's constantly evolving. As we are as individuals, it's constantly evolving. You constantly need to give it attention. You constantly need to be fostering it, working on it, creating more and new and exciting experiences to share with your partner. Because if not, we can't expect it to just stay the same. I don't want my life to just stay the same Mm-mm. for the rest of my life. I want it to grow and expand. And thusly, I want Janelle to grow and expand. And I want our relationship to grow and expand, too.
Of course. And it sounds like you two are doing such a good job of this. growing and expanding, and the mirror neurons, and learning from each other, and still being yourself, your individual self merging, being an individual while still merging at times. It's really good. Do you have any sorts of tips for people in terms of your relationship, your marriage, and working on it, constantly growing?
Yes. One of our biggest one is just giving up the need to be right. Stop getting caught up in that. I have to be right, or somebody has to be wrong in every argument, every disagreement. There's sometimes where it's just okay to see things differently. Mm-hmm. And when we found that out, things changed dramatically in our relationship. It was just like night and day. It's like, so she can see things differently than I do. And if I look through it through her eyes and how she's viewing it, it's like, I can see how she would feel differently towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it just opened you up to understanding your partner so much more.
Well, and at this time in our country, we've talked about this some lately and some different shows and things we've been on, but, you know, there's such a, for a lot of people, there's a heated debate when it comes to politics. And Rob and I are on different sides of the fence when it comes to Hillary and Bernie. But we have had such great conversations about it. And each of us can go, okay, wait a minute, let me think about that. Neither one of us has changed our minds on where we mm-hmm. stand or who we prefer. But we at least have had such great conversations. We can respect each other's opinions on it. And at least then even take a deeper dive, a deeper look into, in this example, into these two candidates. So that works in everything. And when you can learn to do that, which is much easier said than done, but when you can Indeed. Learn to do that, you truly open doors to all kinds of amazing possibilities in your life, in your work, in your relationship, mm-hmm. relationships, to be honest. Not, it's just not just the romantic one, right? It's with everything, with your kids. It's amazing what can happen.
Absolutely. And sex is really difficult for lots of people to discuss. And if they're at odds, politics also. And so good for you that you've managed to have a real dialogue about this, Bernie.
Yeah.
And Hillary.
And I say there too, Diana, because I really do, especially from a woman's perspective, obviously, since that's what I am. A lot of women, if they've experienced any sort of assault or even, you know, abuse or even even just harassment, and I understand that it can make it even more difficult to experience different things, to talk about it, or of course if whatever belief systems, religious belief systems or whatnot come into play, because women are shamed a lot still around our sexuality. I experienced when I was 23, I did experience a sexual assault, and it did make it very challenging. And even when Rob and I were first together, which that would have been like 7-8 years after the fact, it was difficult at times. Things would flare up. Something would trigger a memory from that. And it did cause some bumps, I guess you could say, in the road. And it wasn't easy for me to talk about. So, you know, I just want people to get that you can overcome that stuff.
Yeah. It was a form of PTSD, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know what? I've never thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right.
Right.
Yeah.
And it needs to be discussed, and it needs to be worked through, and sounds like you have done it, and perhaps with Rob's help.
Yeah, you know, and I think a lot of it was, for me, it was the learning to love myself, which we mentioned earlier, but that was having compassion for myself and loving me and accepting me.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I remember the moment that that actually happened, and it was just a life changer. You know, I was doing a particular exercise and that I was working through. And for me, again, it goes way even back to grad school. That was like this huge shift because it was an exercise for that. And I went, oh, my God. And I just started crying. And, and it doesn't, you know, there's still time that we have to take that step back and go, oh, I got to love myself today because I'm not. So it's not like perfect, but, it, you know, at least we have the tools to go forward with.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about energy sex, because I'm wondering, and I think you'll agree, that energy sex is at the heart of this merging, back to our overall title for this program, Merging Sexuality and Spirituality. And I see energy sex at the very heart of this merging. And and what do I mean by energy sex? I think energy sex is magical in the sense that it's not easily explained by our rational mind. And for some people, when they first experience a total body energy sex relationship with the other, it feels miraculous. And it's literally a wonderful experience, as in full of wonder. Mm-hmm. So the world becomes wondrous and fresh as when we were children. And I don't know anyone who couldn't benefit from more magic in their life, mm-hmm. more energy sex, more transcendence. Do you agree that energy sex is at the heart of this merging?
Oh, I definitely believe so. I mean, there are times after we have what you call energy sex that I just want to jump through the roof. I mean, it's just that powerful.
Yeah.
There's a lot of amazing things that happen when we have a great sex life and we do have those amazing experiences. I often talk about how creative I get after we make love, and we make love a lot, so I get to be creative a lot.
Right.
But I even narrowed it down. I found that after we made love, I had a 3-day window to where I would have this amazing energy and this charge, and it's just like, oh my gosh, that's when I need to sit down and write. That's when I need to be artistic. That's when I need to let things flow through me, because I was this open vessel at this time. And I believe it was because of that energy we created and that furnace that was inside of me. Mm-hmm. That's just like, oh man, there's just so much heat coming off of this. So yes, I believe that energy sex is vital to life itself, not only just our relationship.
And see, once we figured that out with Rob, we never let him go more than 3 days.
Sounds like you're a very good, you're a very good and giving wife.
Yeah, yeah. And now I think I view spiritual sex actually somewhat different from transcendent sex. Now, mind you, that gets mm-hmm. into those whole, what I call the boundaries and capacities of human language. But I call spiritual sex, because if you think of it that way, it's so sacred. It's so, you cherish it. It's so precious to you. And yes, it can absolutely feel much more than just a physical experience. There's that deep emotional experience and bond. But the transcendent piece is when you can, maybe you feel like you've left your body. Maybe it's that utter sense of the void. Maybe it's visions like Rob or I get, or that he gets all the time. Or you might hear a voice, which might freak some people out. But so there's so many different things that could be experienced there. It's that way beyond the normal. And whereas I feel like the spiritual aspect is just that deep, like I said, cherished, very sacred experience with either yourself or, of course, with your partner.
Yes, and hasn't it just evolved and evolved? Are you able to have what I call energy orgasms that they're, of course, extremely pleasurable, but they aren't centered just in the genitals? They're experienced perhaps as involuntary waves of pleasure that sweep over the whole body, or maybe even as pleasurable spikes or peaks of sensation that are centered in one or more areas of the body. So what about these energy orgasms?
Yeah, I mean, I know for me, I've done just a meditation and working through the chakras, mm-hmm. the energy centers, for those that might not know, that run down the center of our body. And I wasn't anticipating that orgasmic feeling. However, I did. I said, whoa. I said, okay. It was one of the first times I'd done that, and I wasn't I wasn't trying to accomplish that. I've actually, a friend of mine that does channeling, and he's very powerful at it, and I've listened to a conference call, so it wasn't a personal conversation with him. I wasn't having a reading done or anything like that. But he did a meditation at the end of this, call around the world. And that was the only way I could explain it. It was an orgasmic feeling. My entire body was shaking and trembling, but it was this crazy state of bliss. And there's no way to put it into words. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly can happen.
Oh, yeah. I believe, too, that there's so many different, what I would call types of orgasm, mm-hmm. phases of orgasm. You know, you think so many people just assume that orgasm has to do with sex and that that's the only way to orgasm, which is not true. I mean, you can just get excited and have an orgasm. You know, you can have a fun orgasm. You can have a laughter orgasm, mm-hmm. in my
yes.
opinion. You know, it's just, you know, that utter feeling of bliss, you know, often, you know, when Janelle and I are intimate, even I'll have what I would call an orgasm just as we're getting started. And I get excited and I'm like, oh my God, you look amazing. And to me, that's an orgasm because I get to witness something that gives me so much pleasure that it just blows my mind.
Well, in the laughter orgasm, yesterday Rob did something. We actually had our business meeting, and he did something that just struck me hilarious. I could not stop laughing. I literally, you know, I didn't have just the slight tears in my eyes. I was on the verge of just like sobbing. I mean, I was like, what just happened? And it took probably 5 or 10 minutes for us to get calmed back down. And so, yeah, so he said that. I went, oh, my God, that happened yesterday.
Yeah, and it's those are beautiful. And those are, you know, when you think of those as orgasm and how you get this burst of pleasure just into your life, it's like, wow, I'm having a lot more orgasms than I think.
Well, so couples who laugh together last together, and you're having incredible laughter that's on a higher plane because it has some of the orgasmic energy to it too. Mm-hmm. So bravo.
Yep.
That's great. That's great. And of course, laughter is like internal jogging.
Mm-hmm.
We breathe
yes.
more, the hormones are released more, it's energizing really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, there's that old cliche that laughter is the best medicine, and it's
yeah.
there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of research
yes.
behind that, too, actually.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about transcendent lovemaking, and can you please share an easy step that couples can take to experience transcendent lovemaking? You've touched on several, but let's narrow it down and create an easy step that couples who are listening or even individuals, and they may want to take it back to their partner.
I think there's two, and the only reason I'm saying two is because the first one is basically what Rob said he did originally, and it was just to give, you know, make the intent to see mm-hmm. if he experienced anything different. And however, you know, you have to be open, and that's a matter of practicing non-attachment. So in other words, so don't be attached to what it is or what the outcome is. As Rob shared earlier, it was not what he thought it might be. It was just this vision
yeah.
that popped into his head. So I think that's a key to say, I want to experience it. And if nothing else, let the universe or God or whatever it is you believe in, let them or him or her or whatever know that you would like to experience it.
So that's the intention part.
Yes. Then...
Yeah.
The other thing that pops into my head is a little different. It's an exercise that I think is really fascinating and interesting, but to really pay attention as you are touching your partner. Of course, naturally, I'm so touchy-feely. I'm over here touching Rob.
And I'm not complaining.
No, I'm like rubbing his arm, but I'm feeling my fingers against his arm, the hair in his arm, the warmth of his skin, whether it's dry because we live in Colorado and it's not quite spring yet, or whether it's really soft in other areas, feeling his sexy muscles flex. but truly paying attention, great attention to what I'm feeling. And if you can do that, then you can try to switch it up and then do the reverse. Like, well, what would that be feeling like if I were him? Now, that's deep, I know. But if I were him, how would that feel if she was touching me? See, it gets complicated.
No, but I think you say it well.
Okay.
Well, one of the things I always suggest is for the individual to try to find a balance in giving and receiving pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often we're one or the other. We're the person that likes to get all the pleasure, or we're the one that is giving the pleasure and doesn't know how to receive it. We're like, oh, you know, I can do these things, but I can't just relax and receive the pleasure. But if you can find a balance in the giving and receiving of pleasure, I think that opens you up to experiencing both sides of what the sexual energy can bring to you.
Absolutely, and you say it very well. But for some couples, they may require coaching from you or therapy from me or similar experts because they don't know. And I think women often are raised to please. And, you know, and so they're much more comfortable giving. And they some of these, I've seen some of this in my practice, fair amount of it, they don't know how to receive very well and to be very present. And and this shows up when we talk about receiving oral sex, so cunnilingus. So the woman needs to, because it's, because she's, for some, in some cases, she's not, she is not used to being passive and just receiving. And unless they're in a 69 position, which is a little busy for some people, she has to just be, open her legs, the man's going down on her, or the woman if they're lesbians, and just to be very, very present and to feel entitled to pleasure. And I think just to back up, because this is a big issue for some of my clients, you know, hygiene is just, it's off topic a little bit, but it's so important, you know, so I suggest that they take a shower together or a bath together before they make love and do this oral sex. But it's really hard for some women to just relax, surrender, and have orgasms with cunnilingus, and yet it's one of the most exquisite ways she can reach orgasms. So she's missing out if she can't do that.
Well, and I think it is, there's just so much for women that goes into play there. And it, from the inability to receive, because we are still, unfortunately, so trained to give, depending, not everyone, but yes, I would say I agree completely that in general, that is still a thing that we're taught. And then the opposite happens for those of us that are strong, powerful leaders as women, then sometimes it becomes hard to receive because we're so used to being in control. And so,
yeah, oh, that's another feature. That's right, Janelle. Human control. You have to get for really good sex, you've got to surrender and not feel like you have to be in control. Unless you're into some dominant submission play, and then that's a different story.
Right. And I like to be as transparent as I can be, and Rob knows I live a lot in my masculine energy where I'm very, you know, decision maker, leader, competitive. So it's not easy for me to shift back to the letting go of control. It's changed over the years, but it's still not as easy. And so I just want people to understand it's not something that we can just flip the switch and go, okay, it does take work. And yes, so often, more often I believe than not, we need that guidance, whether it's a good therapist that really understands you, or a coach, mentor, whatever the case may be. And someone that you feel totally comfortable having such intimate conversations with.
Well, and this part right here, what I'm thinking is, and I'm talking from the gentleman's perspective in a heterosexual relationship, is the communication. Because a lot of times a guy will go down on a woman and he doesn't have a clue of what feels good for her or what, you know, our parts are pretty straightforward. We know exactly how to use our parts. And when the woman's there and we want to please her, but we don't know what she likes and there's no communication and it's just, okay, I don't know if I'm doing well, I'm doing not well. So if you can have some kind of signal, you know, oh, that feels good. Or it doesn't even have to be verbal. Maybe you touch the right shoulder if it feels good or you touch the left shoulder. If no, I don't like that. Something so that, because we're, us men usually are such creatures of, we want to do it right. We want to please you. We don't want you to have a bad experience, so help us out a little bit.
And I don't think that has to be with just heterosexual relationships because it's about personal preference and what each individual prefers and feels good. And what, mind you, and Rob, you and I talk about this a lot, but what feels good today, it might not feel so good tomorrow or after three or four times, you're like, okay, we're bored. Let's do something different. So, you know, you just never know. So it's just, it is. Communication's key.
It is key. And There are many men that do feel a little insecure in performing good cunnilingus because they're not getting much feedback from their female partners. And I think that's essential, but many women are shy about that. Now, here's where a video can help. Like if people go to bettersex.com, the Sinclair Institute has a couple of really good videos on oral sex, and we can learn visually, and it can be helpful. I don't think that what's portrayed in pornography is often very helpful. It's not good sex education, but the Sinclair Institute, and I've now narrated over the years since about 1994, I guess, about six or seven videos. The most recent were Great Sex for a Lifetime, Volumes 1 and 2, which is targeted at baby boomers. But, yeah, we can learn visually, and I do loan out some of my videos to my clients and give them a sheet to rate their feelings as they watch them and then discuss after each segment. So it can be a very good learning tool, these well-done, you know, sex education videos.
Right.
Yes, yes. There's because I know Dr. Patty Britton sent us some a year or two ago, and we did. We sat down and watched them and said, wow, you know, this is great. So I think that's wonderful, and I think it's awesome that you've narrated and done that as well and that you've shared them. That's fabulous.
Yes, and Patty's been on my show. We're friends and colleagues, and she's done some very good work.
Yes, she is.
Yeah, so that's wonderful. But Rob, maybe you're willing to self-disclose a little bit more. I have heard men say, in fact, a couple I saw earlier today, you know, he absolutely adores going down on his wife. He loves the sensations. He loves it when she has an orgasm because he's right there. And he just loves the sensuality of it and helping her clitoris get bigger and all of that. So I think for a lot of men, it really is a real turn-on to give his partner sensual pleasure of this sort.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's amazing. Like I said, I try to strike that balance, and I know how much I love it the opposite way. And I think of that when I'm performing, if you will, because I want to put on a good show. I want it to be something that somebody wants to come back for, you know.
But I'll tell you, it's so Rob's very. Clear, he's very open in the fact that he enjoys that.
Yes.
He enjoys giving that, so which is exciting and makes me feel good when he's all excited because he knows that he's making me happy or feel good or whatever.
Well, and again, there's that pleasure in giving pleasure, and there's that term that so many people don't understand. It's that, oh my gosh, if one of the best gifts that you can give your partner is that of a climax, or one of those orgasms we were talking about before. And when you can do that, man, you're giving them the world.
And when you honor each other in that way, and when you can get to that space to honor each other enough to let the other person know how much you're enjoying feeling them, touching them, kissing them, licking them, whatever it is you're doing to them, it excites you and it feels so good because you know you're making them feel good. That in of itself is a spiritual experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I agree with you, and I think that what adds on to this is that every time you have this sort of sex, you're taking a vacation from fight and flight.
Yeah.
And so it's good for your blood pressure and your health, and honestly, it's like lying on a Hawaiian beach with orgasms. And, Hawaii is... I used to live there. My late husband and I lived there. It was just paradise, truly paradise.
Yes.
But, yeah, if you can feel like you're on a beach in Hawaii with orgasms, that's pretty damn special.
Yeah, you can't get much better than that.
I was going to say, sign me up.
Yeah. It's been a few years. Now I just want to go to Hawaii. I'm like, we haven't been in a while.
Yes. And I just, before we run out of time, I wanted to talk with you and to our listening audience about, because I think this is a physiological part that's pretty important, that the sympathetic nervous system is activated by stress. So it triggers our fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. And the parasympathetic nervous system kicks in when we don't feel at risk and it feels safe to relax. You know, our amygdala, the fear center, goes mm-hmm. to sleep, it takes a nap, and, you know, too many people are just constantly stressed and have difficulty accessing the parasympathetic nervous system's relaxation response. Mm-hmm. So that's something that gets in the way of good sex for a lot of people. They just don't know how to relax.
And that gets in the way of the ability of your guides or that spiritual experience or whatever it is that might come through for you, or just the awareness of even those synchronistic events happening, that will prevent that or at least create a bit of a wall. It makes it harder to get through. So, yes, there is that biological aspect, that physiological aspect that can shift. And when you shift into that more open and relaxed space, it's much easier from all those things we've said to even those enhanced dreams. You'll perhaps recall your dreams easier, and maybe there'll be some messages or visits. You never know. So it just shifts everything, and it makes for better physical health. So when you have that great, amazing sex life, you improve your physical health, mm-hmm. your mental health, your emotional health, and your spiritual health.
And it truly impacts your health.
Really. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it definitely does.
Yeah. You know, we know that sexuality, being sexual, really contributes greatly to good health, good physical health. Yeah. Lots of studies to back this up in terms of cardiovascular, in terms of preventing cancer, and just goes on and on and on. And, well, we're coming to the end of the program, and I want to thank you both for returning to Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I want to remind people that they can visit your website for more information at missiondatenight.com. And as I did on February 23rd, I will put this in the summary write-up when we finish the program today. But I think you two have lots of information, and your book is fun, too, your books.
And Sexy Challenges, 33 yeah. Adventures is the newest one.
So, in about 1 minute, just talk about that, because as soon as we hear
it's
the music,
effortless.
We've got to go off.
They're just effortless ideas. So it's not a book you just read. It's a book you actually take and do. And if there's 33 effortless ideas to create some amazing, spiritual, perhaps transcendent sexual experiences with your partner.
That is wonderful. And people need something like this. They need little guidelines, especially if they're not feeling so confident about their sexuality or their relationship. And they can take turns. So I still haven't heard the music, so we have, I guess, a little bit of time.
Well, I
try to be respectful. I've been on Progressive Radio Network now. This is the sixth year, number six.
Wow,
so,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Everybody should just take to heart, though, define your spirituality as a couple and your sexuality as you, as a couple, individually and as a couple together. There's no such thing as normal. What the Joneses are doing or whatever, or grandma and grandpa, you might not want to think about that, but I don't know, your own grandparents you might not want to think about. But
that's very good, Janelle. Thank you to you both. Really appreciate your being on the program. Lots of good information. All right, everybody, goodbye. Next week, I will return. Bye-bye.